Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Give me a different liberal.
That's your fix? We can't control every guest who comes on this show.
Yeah. Watch me.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 258 for the week of July 8th, 2019. I am graphics package David T. Cole, and I'm here with pointed music cue Sarah D. Bunting.
Television man, what's that supposed to mean?
Leggy anchor woman Tara Ariano.
They go all the way up.
And toupeed Seth MacFarlane emoting to footage of the World Trade Center's collapse, Will Leach.
My God.
I just want that's wait, hang on a sec. That's a bit of an abuse of the opening nomenclature conceit, and
I know, I'm sorry.
Frankly, my ability to keep up with it.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
But it was a good one.
What we know about Will Leach is that he likes to say a lot of words, and he thought maybe you would too, Dave. Hello. Welcome to another Extra Hot Great. Joining us this week is our old friend Will Leach. Hello, Will.
Hello. Hi, Will. Thank you for this is my favorite show to go on. Thank you for having me. I say this every time, but this is like I got every time I'm on the show, I listen to the show so much, I always feel like I'm on the Flintstones. Like I'm in the television and I'm hanging out with Flintstone. There's Bam Bam and Betty and Fred. I'm hanging out with my friends on the TV.
So sweet. We are here this week to talk about The Loudest Voice. This is Showtime's 7-part miniseries about Fox News based on reporting by Gabriel Sherman in New York Magazine and his book, The Loudest Voice in the Room. And each episode is just titled a year, starting with the first week was 1995 when Fox News was just getting started, followed by 2001 when some memorable things happened that we don't need to get into. I'll start with this question, Will. The show focuses on Roger Ailes, the late, impresario demon of Fox News, played here by Russell Crowe in a lot of makeup and prosthetics. How do we think he managed to find the truth of a character who is a gross rageaholic given to making inappropriate sexual propositions in fancy hotels? Will.
They certainly got the gross part right, to be very clear. I will tread carefully, but to say that, like, it's possible they may have actually made him too fat. Like, honestly, we are, like, really kind of close into, like, Mike Myers' fat bastard territory, like, a couple times with the makeup on Ailes. It looks, you still see, it's not like Russell Crowe is, like, in gladiator mode anyway these days. So I found it distracting. Crowe, I think Crowe is still a good actor. I think that he's able to, he tends... But, you know, this comes to a problem that you see a lot of times when someone plays like a real, just a flat out creep kind of start to finish. Actors just have a hard time going full villainy for this long. And so Crowe kind of just can't help but invest Ailes with a little bit more humanity than I suspect he may have actually had. And like Russell Crowe is an actor who generally plays characters who have some sort of soul and some sort of inner world. And I feel like Crowe he can't help but make Ailes more sympathetic because he has an inner life and he's thought about this character, which almost feels actually grosser. I feel like this is Roger Ailes is a person that it feels weird to watch a good actor try to humanize him in a way that I understand that like full villain would be really hard to do for seven hours, however long this is. But right. it's hard to have a really truly invest in him in kind of Crow's thing.
It's like Stalin telling you about his favorite childhood dishes. You're
right.
Like,
yeah, right. Yeah. And I think that's the thing is it really does feel like Crow gives it his all. This definitely feels like Russell Crowe feeling like he's definitely doing a lot of acting. He's acting a ton in this. And I don't think he's bad. I just don't think to put him at the middle there. This comes to my general major criticism of the show. It needs to be funnier. And yeah. I know this sounds weird. I know this sounds like a weird thing to say about something that obviously is serious as Fox News and serious as Roger Ailes. But it needs to have – like you can't just play this like a straight like TikTok. Like it works in the book. It works fine in the book. But on a TV show or in a series like this, it needs to have a more tongue-in-cheek angle. To it's hard because we also know all of these people and have like heard a lot of these stories. There needs to be more of an angle other than here's just the story of Fox News. And I don't think the show necessarily has it.
My problem was more that it seems like it's trying so hard to be ponderous, you know? Like I doubt that Roger Ailes was walking around the offices like delivering dialogue and aphorisms the way he does here. But
yeah, that was a note I had as well.
Yeah, Sarah, I know Russell Crowe is, I believe, one of your not faves. How do you think he's doing so far?
I think he's fine. Like, Russell Crowe as a person is not necessarily my fave, but mm-hmm. he doesn't need to be. As an actor, I'm fairly neutral on him. I've also seen Mystery Alaska, like, multiple times. Right. So I'll just let myself out. I think he's fine. The accent is a little unsteady. At least in the early going, but I didn't get any further than the early going. And here's why, partly what Will said, that it has to have some other angle besides here are all these like sort of semi-winky knowing references to the birth of Fox News and like the speaking in aphorisms. And the other thing is, and this is not specific to this project. I think that this is true of a lot of projects like it, that often the casting is like the most interesting thing mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah.
I guess you could call this not the snakes on a plane effect, but maybe like American Crime Story. I was very afraid that it would get to the screen and it would be like, well, we're already done. The wad is shot. and I'm not going to lie, Barry Watson as Lachlan Murdoch is pretty perfect, but I like once I know it, I don't actually have to watch it.
Right. And
also this is trying to be for everyone informationally.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need the pitch for what Fox News is. Like we live in Fox News Rica already. So I'm not sure the, you know, cutaways to the, he's got a point faces in these meetings are the most interesting use of my time. So,
yeah,
I think Russell Crowe is fine. I think everybody given the wigs and makeup they're laboring under is basically fine. It was sort of funny to see Sheriff Witter as Jack Welch. But like I said, like once you see the casting and you're like, okay, I see it. Then 15 minutes in, you're like, who is this for? It's certainly not for me because it's not really taking a position. It's just a Wikipedia article with people yelling.
It's a Wikipedia article with people yelling and then the one guy going.
True. It is a Cacklepedia article. Yeah. I'm all set. Like, I don't think it's bad. I just mm-mm. don't know why it is. And I know it's not for me.
It's also weird too. It has a little bit of the Studio 60 problem, which that like the guy that plays Sean Hannity, I don't like Sean Hannity, but like Sean Hannity has like some television charisma. Like he pops off the screen and the actor that plays him does not. And really none of the, like it's hard. The show keeps telling you that like, Roger Ailes is a genius and look at all the brilliant television innovations he came up with, but then you watch him and then it just looks low grade and stupid and frankly not as polished as the real thing and that hurts. I think it actually does actively hurt the show that like look at this genius, like the scene where he discovers Hannity and puts him on is really bad because this Hannity doesn't pop at all and you're like, if Roger Ailes is watching this guy and thinking this guy should be on television every night, I don't believe he's a genius and so I I think that's a problem too.
Yeah, it's like a Lifetime. I mean, it's a very obviously a very expensive version, but in the sense of the way Lifetime unauthorized stories about past TV projects like have to very carefully get some facts wrong that people remember so they don't get sued. This was definitely true for the 90210 movie, but yeah, it does have that feel. I mean, it's not for me either, I guess. But on the other hand, like I've watched all the HBO movies that are about recent history, like Game Change and Recount and Too Big to Fail and stuff. And this sort of feels of a piece with those, except it's so much longer. I don't know.
Well, maybe that's an issue. It might have worked for me at feature film length, where it could be a little more elliptical and not sort of go over stuff that I already knew. Deleting Seth MacFarlane wouldn't help. I'm not going to lie about that.
My God. My God.
Swoon.
Yeah, but should this have been a movie? Would it have been more compelling as a movie? I mean, Will, you write about both genres. What do you think?
I think Game Change is actually a good example. I think Game Change is pretty good. And one of the things I think it really works about Game Change, look at Julianne Moore playing Sarah Palin. Contrast that performance with Russell Crowe here. Like, because there's a shorter length, because you're not, I don't know if I could have taken 6 hours of Julianne Moore as Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
But like in the 20, 25 minutes she's in that movie, she adds an interesting spin. And it's not a sympathetic caricature for her, but it certainly feels lived in and thought about a little bit, and in a way that's entertaining. And that movie also has a little bit of there's some sadness in that movie and some seriousness, but it also feels it's jazzier than this. It's a little lighter on its feet than this. And I wonder if this could have just been like an hour and 45 minutes if it were allowed to do that. But there is something inherently kind of portentous about 1995. 2001. Yeah. Like there's something about that makes the story feel, it's obviously a big story. Fox News is a huge part of the planet. It's one of the reasons we live in this current hellhole that we currently live right now. And so I'm not trying to devalue its importance, but certainly it doesn't feel like it has the gravitas enough to have earned this sort of like this kind of serious, self-serious treatment.
Yeah, I had a similar note that it was like, you know, the line, people don't want to be informed, they want to feel informed. Uh-huh. That I was like, you're right. I don't want to be informed any further about this. I already do feel informed. And I'm not sure, at least in the first episode, that this level of self-regard was earned.
I want to see this universe as the thick of it. Style presentation.
Right. That's a great idea. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I mean, but to get back to Sarah's question of like, if this isn't for her or a bunch of pinkos like us, like, who is it for? Because it's not for people that love Fox News. They're not watching it. So, like, whom is this for?
Russell Crowe fans? Russell Crowe fans? But like this goes back to Sarah's thing initially. It's the casting, right?
Yeah.
It's the, Gretchen Carlson, Naomi Watts, I can see it. Like it feels like, and I think it's interesting too, because anytime you do something like this, I think this was the problem with Vice, right? The movie that I did not think was very good at all, because it felt so like, smug and just so like it felt like the nightmare version of what this could have been, right? It felt like the when people say they hate Hollywood liberals talking about culture, Vice is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
This doesn't really rise to that, right? Like I think that's what this feels like, the idea of casting. Oh wow, what a good idea to have Russell Crowe play this part, but then it doesn't do anything more with that. It doesn't even like have the energy to be irritating the way that Vice was. And I think that's a problem too.
Yeah. It's like the sense that you know, a movie like The Post is about journalism, but it's also about our current day.
Right.
This is trying to be that too, except it's about the thing that it's about. Like it's not illuminating anything else. It's just itself. Like, you know, saying it's a Wikipedia entry is so true. It just feels very unnecessary. The only parts that I think actually work are the most horrible parts, which are the sexual assault, sexual coercion scenes, which really do feel like creepy and awful and claustrophobic in a way that's very effective. But then it's like, but do I want this? Do I want to invite this into my home? Maybe I don't.
And then they cut back to, then the next scene is him being a genius in the boardroom again. Uh-huh. And that's another problem.
Yeah. Mm. Right. I also wonder if Rupert Murdoch is getting a comparatively flattering portrayal because he's still alive. A very cynical thought to have, but I did have it.
Oh, one final note from me. When they actually launch Fox News, it was so firing of the Death Star in angles and equipment that it couldn't have been. I mean, I realized the Death Star was basically a mixing board, but they really aped all the angles and timing of that. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. So this thing is transparent Emmy begging. Do we think it will probably work? Let's start with Will.
I don't think so. And you guys might know this better than me, but it doesn't really feel like this is catching on. It's probably the best way to put it. It doesn't feel like this doesn't feel like something that I don't know anyone that's talking about the show. I don't think the reviews have been like particularly great. Now that's okay. Like that doesn't not necessarily that necessarily has to be for the Emmys, but it doesn't feel other than maybe, hey, you know what? Isn't it cool that we can have Naomi Watts trying to get this Emmy? I don't actually see it.
Well, the other problem is going to be that it won't be for this year's awards. It would have to be for next year.
Yeah.
Like, is anyone still going to be talking about this in 2020? I doubt it. But Sarah, what do you think?
I think if they had released it earlier in the year, maybe. But the other thing is like the Emmy categories now, like Ryan Murphy can just run the table with miniseries category. So a lot of the prestige projects like this, Temple Grandin type of things that like you just vaguely heard of it, but nobody you know watched it. It was like the Hootie and the Blowfish of shows, and yet it cleaned up at the Emmys because it had this category to itself. TV isn't like that anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't think it has a shot. And also its window is like over a year away, by which time I'm pretty sure everyone will be like, oh, that thing, it might get nominated, it won't win.
Also, nobody wants to go in Roger Ailes' hugging machine. You don't want to be there. It's time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
Dave. Oh, my God.
What?
Nothing. Nothing. That was perfectly fine thing to say. Divorce is back on HBO for its final season. It's been so long since it was on that in the premiere, which was last week, they show us Frances, the Sarah Jessica Parker character, like being broke. She used to live in this beautiful old house in Hudson. Now she's in this like kind of okay apartment in what seems to be Inwood. And I'd totally forgotten like why she was poor. I was watching on a screener, so I didn't get previously. And like, oh yeah, her art gallery burned down. But it was 18 months ago. Like, why would I ever remember that? There's been 5,000 TV shows since then. But her kids are still weird. Now her son is a senior in high school and has decided he doesn't want to go to college, which is probably just as well since no one can afford it. So I don't know why she's fighting him on this so hard. And also, I guess this is just a thing on HBO this summer. Like all of the prestige show kids don't want to go to college. The other common storyline with Big Little Lies is that Nick, who is the Tracy Letts character, is in jail on financial fraud charges, and the victims of his schemes are pissed and taking it out on his wife, who is played by Molly Shannon, who is still great. Also new this season, Frances has a boyfriend named Henry, played by James Leisure, possibly, who is adorable. And the show is fine. This was created by Sharon Horgan, who created Catastrophe with Rob Delaney and starred in it as well. But she has not been involved in it, I don't think, since season one. And every season has been shorter. And I don't totally buy these showrunners' ability to dramatize what life is really like for formerly wealthy people who are now suddenly in their 50s and surprised to be broke. Like Frances eventually gets a job as a managing director at like this weird urban bird charity that's run by a brother and sister of like the children of the whoever started it. But we're supposed to believe this pays her bills, like living even in the outermost reaches of any New York borough, which I don't. And we also get a reminder from her that she used to work in corporate recruiting, like she wouldn't just go back to doing that, whether she found it unfulfilling or not, with two kids in high school and about to go to college. Like, whatever. What's more interesting about this show is that the season is that it's happening at all, which it does for a variety of political reasons that Ben Travers outlines in a post on IndieWire from a couple of weeks ago. And as he puts it, it's a talent play to keep two creative partners happy because Sarah Jessica Parker's production company makes the show in addition to her starring in it. So if she wants another season to wrap it up and HBO has a half hour programming to block to fill, why not? And the issue is that being competitive as a streaming service means that HBO needs to start scheduling originals on Mondays as well as the traditional blockbuster night of Sundays. And sometimes that means ambitious award plays like Chernobyl. And sometimes it means this very unnecessary season that I am for some reason still going to watch. So it's only 6 episodes and they have already released all of the screeners. So I'll probably just burn through them this weekend and that'll be it. So that's divorce shrug. It's a very weird thing to be happening.
Tara.
Yeah.
Would you like to file for divorce?
Divorce. Yes. For my plug, I would like to mention that as a pursuant to our discussion about Holy Moly on the podcast in the last episode, I wrote about it for Primetimer and made some suggestions for how to make it even perfecter. Will, as one of our nation's foremost golf fans, this will be of interest to you. So I'll link it in the show notes, but you can find that on primetimer.com.
All right, Will, what do you got?
I feel obliged to point out, I do not, in fact, like golf. She's being ironic there. I don't like golf. Golf is bad. Golf is a waste of land.
Will loves golf.
I don't like golf. Stop it. Stop it.
Golf loves Will.
No, it definitely doesn't do that. I want to talk on the dial about the U.S. Women's National Team. I'm still very excited about their awesome win on Sunday. I wrote a big piece for New York Magazine this week, kind of writing about how inspiring their win was, how like they feel like very much of the generation, of the era, in that, you know, now there was a long time where like your Michael Jordans of the world and your Tiger Woods and your Derek Jeters, they're talking out about political issues was the last thing they wanted to do. Yeah, they didn't want to mess up all the money they made and all of their success and popularity. And now, like, I have to say, one of the things is, like, this team was obviously really fun. And if they would have, as I wrote in the piece, if they would have done nothing but like drink shitty vitamin water and do like ad reads for Equifax, they still would have been awesome. But the fact that they didn't, and the fact that they had this, that there were all these fights with Trump, that no one wants to go to the White House, has actually, it feels like it's something that is particularly inspiring and particularly of this moment. Speaking of that, one of my favorite moments on television in quite some time was when Fox News did a Fox News. Hey, have you heard about Fox News? Big story. They did a live shot outside of a sports bar in Lyon, France, where the final was held. And the minute that everyone in the sports bar realized that Fox News was doing a live shot, they all started yelling, fuck Trump, fuck Trump, fuck Trump, which was A, funny, because I always encourage drunk people in bars to start chanting vulgarities the minute they are on live television. We owe it to people to do that. No matter what it is, preferably about Trump, but whatever your vulgarity pleasure, I encourage you to do that. But also the fact that it so upset Trump, who, it turns out, is somewhat sensitive, that he actually has lashed out to Fox at Fox News over Twitter over like 3 or 4 times since that. And the Washington Post reported it was specifically because of that. So thank you to the U.S. Women's National Team for being awesome, for winning, for upsetting Trump, and just generally brightening up an otherwise dreary golf-laden summer. I hate golf. I want to be clear. I don't like golf. My plug, I wrote about that in the new issue of New York Magazine. I wrote about Kevin Durant, who just signed with the Brooklyn Nets, and they're into the sports stuff in New York Magazine. I, of course, have my regular newsletter, tinyletter.com/William F. Leach. It is free. It's one of them free newsletters. Just links to everything I write every week. And season 3 of The Will Leach Show on SI.TV, which you can find on Amazon. It does return in September. Our guests last year included Heidi Gardner. Heidi Gardner was our last guest. We had David Cross, who was kind of there. So yeah. I will give him that. It was the one time I've ever did an interview where I thought, wow, the air conditioner is really loud in this studio. That was the first time that had ever happened. But Reed Scott was on. Sean Astin was particularly great. Jason Jones, Andre Holland. It was a really, really fun season. We are doing season 3 in September. You can catch up on all the archives on Amazon and on SI.TV.
Sweet.
Yay.
Sarah D. Bunting.
So I plunged into The Handmaid's Tale. I was like, all right, well, let's just see. And now I'm caught up, so I guess I'm watching season 3. I'm having the same issue that I had with it as of the end of last season, which is that it is good. And there is some interesting casting here in the 3rd season, and I definitely want to see where it goes. I just want it to get there faster. Some of these 54-minute episodes could be 42 minutes if they would cut out the superfluous shots of Elizabeth Moss staring disgustedly into the middle distance.
Oh, God.
She's a handmaid in Gilead. We fucking get it.
Yeah, she's like, not happy. Got it.
Yeah,
check.
Nor am I with this. Like,
somebody move those balloons out of the background. Come on.
What? Silence that kazoo.
There's a beach ball on the hanging wall. Jesus. Like, she's a good actor. We know this. Lingering on her, like, opaque, staring responses to things is not actually good television. When you do it every 10 minutes in every episode. And that's kind of generally true as we're recording this. We're 7 episodes in, and it does feel like either what's happened to date could have happened in 4 or maybe 5 episodes, or that the show is not necessarily aware of where its story strengths are right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm far from the only commentator to note this, but I would way rather be watching Rory's transition back into non-theocratic life north mm-hmm. of the border than June's repeated attempts to get at her daughter, which, not for nothing, these are inconsistently supervised and or punished. Like, she gets away with shit when it's convenient and doesn't when it's convenient for them to make a point.
Yeah.
And when she doesn't, she's obliged to be point handmaid for a tin pot show of PR force, or participate in the hanging of a Martha who is dying for helping her, and she doesn't do anything about it. Like, there's a super long pause and June fumes for like a month, and then she goes along because she has to. I'm not saying that she wouldn't or that I wouldn't, but between the constantly changing stakes as far as what she's allowed to get away with
mm-hmm.
and the fact that she deliberately missed her best shot at getting out, this protagonist is really trying my ability to think of her as the protagonist. At least Nick hasn't been on screen in a while.
Yeah.
I don't think we're rid of him. That's an improvement, at least. The show is maddening. I can't stop watching it
mm-hmm.
under his eye.
Yeah. The problem with the show and her position in it, June's position, is that in earlier seasons, they made a point of showing, like, she can get away with shit because fertility is so prized and so rare, like, that literally her value is her body, and like there's only so much that they can do with it. And then they forget all about that. Like, they don't show the minor afflictions that much. And not that I'm saying I want to see more torture, but it's like in the early going, it was like, well, you could fuck with a handmaid's eye or like burn the palm of her hand or something. And like there are ways that June could be pushing her luck, and she's not. Like, she's not. She's so focused on the fight for her children. And again, like, you know, when we brought this up when Alan was here, he was like, nope, like, that's not enough of a driver. It's dumb that she's still there. Like, even as a parent, which we are not, like, that was his position. But like, the fact that she's not taking the privileges that she does have to, you know, try and effectuate change beyond her own self and the people that are biologically related to her is also making her less sympathetic for me. That said, I will also watch every episode of the stupid show. I could never quit it.
Yeah. I mean, there's also, like, they do have a way with a creepy visual that I'm like, why don't you just flee? Like, the Capitol is basically empty right now. Go around the memorial and run off. And then I could stop staring at that extremely upsetting Ozymandian rendition of busted Abe Lincoln and his, like, shins being all that was left.
I think the finale, you're going to pitch this finale, but the finale is like a bottle episode. It is all about what happens with the Gilead gender reveal party.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There is so much potential in the show for them to like widen out their lens and show what life is like for people other than June. Like, what happens when you're a functionary that's not, you know, a commander? Like, what is like for someone who's a wife but not a, you know, like Mrs. Waterford or whatever? Like, what is like for the aunts? And like that gets explored a little bit more. We have the episode that will have just dropped when this episode drops is about Aunt Lydia and gives her like pre-Gilead backstory. And that one was more interesting. Like, duh, of course, it was all about Aunt Dad. Like, no one's mad at that.
Right.
But it just needs to figure itself out because this is is so maddening. Like, you're right. It's very frustrating.
Well, and the one about, you know, she and Mrs. Lawrence go for a walk, like, and I'm always like a little flipped out by the fact that Mrs. Lawrence plays the lady who was accused of
killing
her grandmother to death. Yeah.
On Law and Order.
Yeah. Like, you are one of maybe five other people who would consistently be like, oh, it's, you know, grandma killing girl from Law and Order.
Yep.
And she's quite a good actor. And that episode was interesting. But then, you know, it's the Walt effect. Like, she's, Mrs. Lawrence is having a meltdown, and June is like petting the wall and listening to Hannah's laughter. And it's like, you know, it's not that this isn't realistic, but
seen this 50 other times.
Yeah. Like there's no momentum. Yeah. Grab her or don't.
You know what they haven't seen? It's a boy.
What does the cake look like? For my plug, I was going to plug the upcoming episode of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, which is a ranking episode of 10,000 Maniacs in My Tribe, but I would also like to introduce Episode Bounty Hunt. I will explain why I'm looking for this at a future time, but I am looking for an episode of Beretta. It is season 4, episode 4, ironically 404. It is nowhere to be found. It is not on streaming. It is not available on DVD. It is not on VHS. I emailed my guy at the Paley Center. They don't have it. He is going to his sources, but folks, if you can find me season 4, episode 4, featuring Dennis Quaid as, I believe, a sex worker, a $25 Amazon gift card or some other gift card if you don't choose to support Amazon, I'm with that. If you can find me this episode in watchable form, I'm not talking about you reenact it with popsicle sticks, although I may have to accept that, $25 Amazon gift card for the first bounty on Beretta season 4, episode 4. Go forth, and you can find me at Tomato Nation, and my email is bunting@tomatonation.com.
Love it.
Go get it.
All right, I want to talk about this show called The Rook, which is on Stars with a Z. This is sort of like this spy show that meets Misfits or X-Men, basically spies plus mutants plus the UK equals The Rook. So there's mutants and they work for the government, but government bad. That's sort of the show. The show itself as a whole kind of feels like a consolation prize that Stars wanted to give people that were watching Counterpart, which has been canceled. Mm-hmm. But this show is not in the same league at all. This show is boring. It's mirthless. So the pilot has this character called Miffany, rhymes with Tiffany. She's like a charmless amnesiac, and she's trying to figure out the mutant government organization that apparently she's in. She kind of wakes up and discovers that she's one of these mutants with special powers. And she looks like, as Tara said, she looked like Leslie Rose from Game of Thrones. Rose Leslie from Game of Thrones and The Good Fight. She looks like her if she was worried about something for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I watched the show, and the show is boring, and I saw two episodes and were like, I don't need to see anymore. And then for this, I just looked up The Rook because I wanted to find out. I wanted to double check it was on Stars because I was having a senior moment. And so then I discovered this is based on a novel. And then I started reading about the novel, and the novel sounds super great and fun. Like, the novel involves vampires and sentient mold things and just a whole bunch of crazy shit, including this like Belgian secret centuries old Frankenstein-y cult that's doing all this weird shit in the UK. There's nothing like that in the show, and there's not even a hint that they're going there in the show. It's like Stars bought this novel and it's like, well, what can we afford to do here? Yep. I guess we'll just have, you know, a couple agents that have special shocking electric powers, or, you know, can move metal or whatever, you know, heroes-esque things they can do. And then we'll just dispense all the fun stuff. And even if this is not the case, even if they do get crazy in, like, say, episode 4, like, you can't introduce your show's concept in episode 4 anymore. Like, mm-mm. That is not the way TV works. Like, you at least have to do that, you know, 40-second minute something weird just happened. Oh, this show isn't just about, you know, like the show feels like Luther's subordinates as they go off do busy work while Luther's doing the main job that you see on screen. Like, that's this show so far, except that one of the characters can use electricity. The novel sounded goofy and weird enough. And the novel apparently is kind of funny as well and absurdist. And this show is not that. So it may be buy the novel, but maybe quit the show. So congratulations, stars. Another plug I want to give is actually for Punky Brewster, and I'll tell you why. We recently redid our...
Oh, my neck.
My backyard. our backyard. It belongs to Tara, too, even though she never goes back there.
No, I don't.
I had a really old ice box that I found in an antique store in Texas. I bought it for like $30. I put it in the backyard, and thanks to Punky Brewster, I went and I took the hinges off so you can't trap yourself in the fridge and die. So I just wanted to thank Punky Brewster for that life lesson.
And Jesse Murray, who presented that episode for the canon.
For my plug, I just want to say this week on the Patreon Extra Extra Hot Great Podcast, we are doing a network fantasy draft as suggested by one of our listeners. He has like itemized what we have to do. We're going to take an Anchorman. We get to pick two sitcoms and this and that. And we're going to sort of take turns. And then people will, I guess, eventually vote on who has the best fantasy network at the end of that. So for our Patreon supporters, once again, thank you very much. Look forward to that on Friday. It is time for the canon. Will Leach presenting today. Take it away, Will.
Okay, well, I am presenting episode 5 or part 5 of OJ Made in America. I'm pretty sure this is the first time an Oscar winner has been submitted to the canon. So this is the EGOT of these things. So you should know that I consider OJ Made in America a masterpiece, and I know that I do, and I do, and I've earned that designation because I wrote about it 2 months before it came out for New York Magazine, and the headline writer put the word masterpiece in the headline, even though it was not, in fact, in the piece. So next thing you knew, every ad for it said a masterpiece, Will Leach, New York Magazine. So I damn well better consider it a masterpiece. So I watched it again for the first time since it came out in early 2016, or as I should really just say, pre-November 2016. And after watching the entire show, not just at part 5 for this episode, for this show, I'm relieved to say it is still a masterpiece. Now, you should know, I do consider it a movie. I have the Grish Unleashed podcast. We talk about movies. I picked it as the best movie of 2016. And if you don't think it's a movie, I would counter with the fact that it won an Oscar. So for the sake of this show, though, I had to use one of the episodes. So I went with number 5, the final episode, for two reasons. One, it is the final episode with all that comes with that. But mainly, two, it is the most standalone, self-contained of all of them because it gets into the part of the story we probably all know the least, what happened with OJ after the trial. Now, it has incredible footage like the rest of the documentary, from OJ yelling at the TV pundits after he got back from the courthouse to OJ going on a young Wendy Williams show and oddly charming her to an absolutely insane OJ pay-per-view special that I am ashamed to say I actually paid for and wrote about for the Black Table, my old pre-Deadspin site back in the day. I couldn't expense it because we had no expenses. So, so this episode tells a more traditional 30 for 30 story, but it ties it all into the context that came before it. It is an incredible episode of television inside an incredible movie. First, though, we do have to finish off that trial. Ezra Edelman, who directed the film, is insanely even-handed throughout, giving context and full airtime to everyone. Dispassionate, but never inert. One of my favorite quiet pieces of brilliance from the film, and indicative of kind of his whole attitude about it, is that when he asks a juror how in the world they could have deliberated for only a few hours, his irritated, baffled question that strikes me as totally reasonable actually also produces a totally reasonable answer.
267 days, that's how long the trial lasted. Mm-hmm. 1,105 pieces of evidence. Mm-hmm. 45,000 pages of trial transcript from 133 witnesses. How the hell did you deliberate for 3.5 hours?
How many days was it again?
267 days.
266 nights. 266 nights I went back to that room alone. Wasn't able to talk to other jurors, wasn't able to talk to family. Nobody but me and my thoughts. I waited till the end to come up with a decision. But each night that I went home after listening to testimony, I stored that. By the end of that trial, I knew where I was. And it was clear.
So after the trial, we get into the meat of this episode's story. Now, OJ realizes, Wildby, after being found innocent, quickly, though perhaps not as quickly as other people might have recognized it, that he can't just go back to the golf course and pretend it's the old days. Everyone in Brentwood hates him, he has no way to generate income, and the Goldman family makes it clear they will hound him forever. OJ didn't go to prison, but there's no question, even before the civil trial, that his life got a lot worse. He tries to be cocky at first, but that cockiness fades very fast.
What people don't realize about a civil trial is that a judgment is a piece of paper, and that is what you get. Then it becomes the creditor's responsibility to figure out a way to collect on it.
Do you have a moral obligation to pay any of that?
I don't feel I have a moral obligation to pay, because morally I've done nothing wrong. I think I have a legal obligation when I have money to pay. I wish I could sign a $50 million contract and give them whatever they had to give if I knew I can get it back on appeal.
Oh, he knew he'd never pay. Because the system wanted to make certain that they got everything they had. They brought in the guy that handles the estates of Marilyn Monroe, Elvis, and James Dean to say that OJ was in that same class, that he would make that kind of money for the rest of his life. As his agent, I'm sitting there, not going to happen. Those people didn't murder anybody, or at least in the perception of America, that he didn't murder anybody.
It became our goal to be after him for the rest of his life. He's going to always know that we're right behind him, looking over his shoulder, trying to figure out a way to get him.
Now, that's Fred Goldman, the father of Ron Goldman. I feel obliged to point out this moment, that this is not in the script that I wrote here, but I feel obliged to remind everyone, just to defend my old friend AJ DeLorio and Gawker, that the judgment given to Fred Goldman was less than the judgment that Gawker had to give to Hulk Hogan. I'm just noting that just for the crowd to note. Anyway, so basically what Ron Goldman... What Fred Goldman, he's after every single cent of OJ's money. As he says there, he wants OJ to know that no matter what he does, he's going to be trying to get every cent that he has. And that kind of sets up what happens. We start setting the stage for the end of our story. Suddenly, Simpson's memorabilia becomes all he has in his life. So he moves out of the house on Rockingham, in kind of incredibly staging paparazzi footage of his last day so he can sell that. He hires a PR agency to rebuild his name to absolutely zero success and starts hanging out with some increasingly shady people who are the only people left who will spend time with O.J. Simpson.
In Florida, his group of friends was much different.
Did you get that set up?
We gotta get some more money out of here before Christmas.
They weren't the Lynn Swans and the Rosie Greers.
You don't fuck with our game, man.
We hung around with anybody that was more thuggish, the lower people.
Why don't y'all put the camera down?
But to the lower people, he was like the godfather.
You're fucking with our golf game, okay? We out here to have a good time, and you're fucking with our game. Okay?
And because of that, his head grew.
Think this stuff here.
Yeah?
All right, I'm hungry.
Vader.
Why they wanted me to
do that? Darth Vader, dog.
Hey, let me tell you, Vader.
He's on a show, by the way. That's the thing that's happening at the end there. I don't like the idea, by the way, as personally myself, one of the lower people. I don't actually like the implication of that particular witness. But nevertheless, then we get to the final chapter, the downward spiral of OJ ending in Vegas. OJ stealing his merchandise back, or as Seth Meyers put it on SNL back in the day, OJ Simpson was sentenced to 7 years in jail for, you know, murder. Or as Carl Douglas calls it, the fifth quarter, which I think is a really good analogy in this. That OJ would commit another crime after skating on the initial murder rap is the ultimate idiot move. As one fellow conspirator puts it hilariously, this whole situation was a very dumb situation. But Edelman, like he does with everything, puts it into context and makes it all kind of understandable. The greatness of this movie and this episode is that it actually explains everything. It gives everyone a voice, especially Nicole, who actually, if you look back at it, it really feels understood for perhaps the first time ever in this movie, and somehow encompasses anything and everything. This movie tells a million stories in one big one. All five episodes, for the record, should be in the canon. This movie should be response. It really is a masterpiece. And for the record, just because I want to sneak in one last thing here, this clip.
Why do people wonder about my intentions? Why do people ask me so many questions about how I made it to the top? About all the times I made those deep defensive stops. See, the only way I live my life is large, and I got the most games with 200 plus yards.
Yes, OJ is somehow a worse rapper than Sam Malone. I wouldn't have thought that possible. Anyway, I thus humbly submit OJ Made in America, Episode 5, for consideration for the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Well, Sarah covered it in depth for Previously.tv, so she should go first.
All righty. Yes, I did. I agree that it's a masterpiece. I have watched it again a couple of times since it was first on. Writing about it and sort of trying to communicate how great it was and why was like, it was a pleasure, but it was also a struggle because it's like, just watch it. And I recommend it constantly, all the time, to, like, you know, plants, people who don't speak any English. I'm like, no, trust me, watch it. Ficus, you'll love it. I wasn't sure about episode 5 because it's, you're right that it is the most self-contained, but it's also kind of, I mean, it's not the weakest, I wouldn't say, but it's a bit different from the others. It doesn't feel quite as dense. Maybe it's because OJ, it turns out to be such trash in this one and is sort of surrounded by trash in this one. And it just is like almost claustrophobically, like disorientingly trashy almost. But there's this line by this woman who I think Ghost wrote a book for him, Farber, Celia Farber, who talks about the fact is that the story is not just OJ. The story is OJ and us. And I think that line is true, and one of the things that makes this whole series, this maxi movie, whatever, so effective, that, you know, we're all sort of, we're watching it, but we're also part of it. I mean, to say that rewatching episode 5 is enjoyable is not quite right, but it's also, I remember when I got the screeners and I first started watching it, I remember just thinking that, like, I could tell almost immediately that I was witnessing something great, like a great document. And I still feel that way, and I'm thrilled that it still holds up. I think this was an excellent presentation, and that guy, like, I kind of want to make a ringtone out of that guy saying that it was a very dumb situation because he just had a certain way of putting it that was really good. But yeah, in a lot of ways, the fifth episode kind of encapsulates the in America part of the Made in America, for good or ill, the best and most accurately of all of them, all of these sort of narratives and hypocrisies that come together in the person of OJ Simpson. So great presentation. It's a great film. I would be happy to throw any of these episodes in the canon. And I'll definitely be voting yes on this one. Who's next?
I'll go next. This was an excellent presentation. Thank you. And I also watched it when it aired as well. Of course, it is amazing. Let's say masterpiece for the 50th time. It is. It's so deep. And I think I appreciate especially that you called out how hands-off Edelman seems. I mean, no documentarian is totally, of course, like, selections are made, duh. But it's the corners of the story that sort of sneak in are sort of surprising. Like, the folk in this episode, when he's focusing on Fred Goldman's, you know, continuing to push for justice, mounting a civil trial, all this stuff, it's like, Yeah, he had that. He was able to do that partly because he seemed to have a lot of resources, but also like he's not related to them. Like the Brown family couldn't pursue OJ in the same way because they didn't want to cut off him to cut off access to the kids for them. And, you know, it's a gross thing to say that Fred Goldman had a privilege, but, you know, in a sense he did. And he pushed it like as far as anyone possibly could. And God bless, like, you know, for him to feel vindicated by this, what Carl Douglas calls like a really astonishing overcharge on this kidnapping and memorabilia nonsense. Like, he's Carl Douglas is right, but Fred Goldman is right too. Like, you know, it's a complicated story. Like, duh. Again, duh. But the other parts that sort of shine through and that Edelman doesn't really lean on too much is OJ as a sociopath, which clearly he is. And that's the point of including, you know, the Wendy Williams interview where she keeps saying, like, despite herself, she knows she should know better, but she can't help it. He's so charming. She really likes him. And that plus the scene from the pay-per-view special where he's talking about like how unfairly he's been treated and stuff, like, oh, this is all very familiar. Like, all of this is, it's the Trump story, but it's also the Michael Jackson Leaving Neverland story. Like, the rich, powerful person who gets away with just about everything and then gets checked once, and it's like the greatest injustice in history. It's like, this is a story we keep seeing played out over and over again. You know, this is toxic masculinity. It's the same story over and over again. This one ended in murder, but you know, whatever. And I'm surprised you didn't talk more about the "if I did it" part that they that he gets into in this part of the story too. Because, man, like,
the
talk about
your lap of Fred, love it.
Yeah, right. Fred, the graphic designer who made "if" as small as it could be and still be kind of legible. Yeah, that, I mean, just this phase of his life is like coming up with terrible ideas and no one around him having the sense to be like, no, you can't do that. Like, I won't say these are ideas hatched on a lot of cocaine, but, you know, they definitely seem like the kinds of ideas other people on cocaine might have, hypothetically. Don't sue me. And yeah, it's like all of it. This is great. It, you know, watching this part of it made me want to rewatch the whole as well. But if I were going to choose one episode of this, I don't know if this would be the one. I mean, I feel like episode two that would more contextualize OJ's success and the story of Los Angeles's racial history, particularly cops versus black people. That if I were going to choose one, that might be the one I would go with. But I'm on the fence because it is also great, Dave.
Okay, I will jump right off your point because that was my main consideration. To me, when we first watched this for our original discussion on it, what really impressed me most about this documentary, it was how it framed this whole trial in America. Like, is this a race story? Is this a story about just some football guy who did a bad thing? Is this an income divide story? Is this a story about payback for Rodney King? Like, there's all these really bigger questions that surrounded the OJ trial. You know, that was an anthropological dive into America via OJ Simpson. That was for me at the heart of why everybody's calling this project a masterpiece. Episode 5 to me sort of starts off that way at the tail end of the trial, but then as it gets into like the comic buffoonery of OJ Simpson's post-civil suit life, it kind of steps away from that for a good like hour and 15 minutes as it goes through that. And it's not to say that they shouldn't have covered that, but, you know, given the unenviable position of having to pick a slice of this big project to, you know, so that Will can double dip here between movies and TV. I am going to say, like, for me, I kind of agree with what Taro is mulling over, which is further back in the series when this documentarian is really tackling what O.J. Simpson's trial means in America at a higher level. That's the most powerful part of this documentary. That is what I remember from this documentary. And that's what I took away from it the first time. That, of course, is not to say that this is a bad part. There's lots of like, oh my God moments, like even like the banal stuff, like seeing 20-year-old news footage feels like it's 200 years old now. Yeah. Like it made me feel so ancient just watching that. And it's not that long ago. Some really powerful moments just within that footage, like when they show the crowd outside the courthouse and when they finally over the radio hear the verdict and they all go crazy. There's like horses, there's and police the horses there.
Freak out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they all freak out. It was like, wow. I mean, that really kind of sold the moment. Lots of things like that. And then once you get into those years where O.J. Simpson's just doing stupid shit all the time, they've got footage of him trying to be like one of the people at a local church, and they've given him a I don't know what kind of hat it is. It's like fez shaped, and he does this thing like, oh, it doesn't fit my head, like you know, therefore you must acquit type of thing. It was like, oh boy, like that kind of like that one scene for me like kind of painted the OJ personality as a whole, but certainly his frame of mind such as it is at the end of, you know, this story. But for me, the core of this is what I'm saying. It's when they're asking the bigger pictures, they're contextualizing the trial and asking some hard questions about America. That's this to me. And I don't think episode 5 is the best example of that. So, but with that, I say this sounds like it's time for the vote. Sarah D. Bunting.
It's a yes for me.
Tara Ariano.
I can't believe I'm saying this because it's also good, but because it's also good, I feel like I have to hold it to a higher standard than I would otherwise. So I'm going to say this is great, but for me, this was not the best episode of the 5. So I'm going to vote nay.
I'm going to say the same thing. You have to close out the story somehow. And then sometimes the end of the story isn't your strongest material just by happenstance. And I think that's a big part of this. But that should not dissuade you from watching this if you haven't, because it is really good. And
it's amazing.
They tackle it from so many directions that it's sort of like getting like 3 or 4 documentaries in one. Thanks, OJ. So with that, unfortunately, we have to say that OJ Made in America, Part 5. You're good, you're great, but you are not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Can.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Sarah has the winner.
I sure do. It is Stranger Things breaking a 4-day viewing record, according to Netflix's, granted unverified, but Netflix's reporting. Funny semi-related story. My husband and I, we actually do love each other. So when I tell you that we brought each other to a Mets game for our anniversary, look, we sat near Pete Alonso, who is like the only thing that's good about the team right now. As you may have read on Twitter recently. So it was Stranger Things night, which only meant that there were like factoids about Stranger Things and like, you know, Gaten Matarazzo is a big Mets fan. And
you had to hang from the rafters upside down.
Costumes. Yeah, there was and like related something about someone who had the same character name. Like there was a McNeil and there's also a McNeil in the Mets. Anyway, there were people who were in costume, and apparently there's some like plant creature thing that looks like a vagina flower.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah,
sure.
That's from season 1.
Don't watch it. Couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm.
Demigorgon. Mm.
Oh, okay. So, so there's a guy in the crowd with a mask of this creature on, and they show him like in the second inning. And then he's sitting behind someone during one of the quizzes after like the 5th inning. And then, the final callback was that there was the kiss cam. And then they put this guy in his little flower vagina mask on the kiss cam. And I was like, I think this is even funnier if you watch the show, but whoever did this runner, like, look, the Citi Field people have to make their own fun at this point. Cause on-field product, not cutting it. But anyway, yay, Stranger Things. We enjoyed that, and Netflix can enjoy this viewing record that apparently is a thing. Not that we have any way to gauge it.
And loser of the week?
Well, Teen Mom OG star Amber Portwood, who has already served time in prison, has been arrested again for domestic battery.
Amber.
She was doing well. She had this boyfriend, Andrew. They had another baby together. She was like one of the few that didn't have another baby again, like right away. And he was apparently holding this baby when she allegedly hit him. So not great. And Amber. This right after Janelle, the other hottest mess of teen momdom, who gets in trouble with the law second most, just got back custody of her kids after her husband apparently murdered their dog because it took a nip at one of their kids. So yeah, teen mom franchise continues to be the fucking darkest. But yeah, extra bad news for Amber.
Speaking about extra bad news.
Do you know what time it is, Dave?
I think I do. I think it's non-regulation game time.
It is. Woo! Tube Tunes 5. That's right. Tube Tunes is back.
I'm surprised you're still finding them, frankly.
I'm very good at this. Dave is on his honor not to have previewed these clips when I sent them to him, but he will play a clip of an original song from a TV show. For one point, you tell me the show it's from. That's it. Here's what you need to know. As always, no show is in this game more than once. A few of the selections are pre-existing songs for which the show in question has written or supplied new lyrics. And for those who listen to this podcast with their kids, one of these is extremely filthy, though your kids probably won't know what the specific terms are or what they mean if you don't
know
wanna
something's
have to
wrong.
If you don't want to explain it to them, maybe listen to this game without them. Just a suggestion. Sorry. I'm not a parent. all right. Let's throw it to Biggie to see who goes first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. So let's go Sarah, Will, Dave.
All right.
Are you ready to play Tube Tunes 5?
Yeah.
Yes.
Please play clip one.
Heads around, bellies are squishy. Look at the toes, lots of many curls and shrimp. Are they ticklish? Are they jigglish? Can they be tricked? Can they be chucked? Which ones will move? Which ones will talk? But more important, which ones can dance? Oh, who will be baby of the year?
Thank you, Picky, for smiling upon me with an episode I just watched at y'all's house. This is I Think You Should Leave, right?
Yes, it is. I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. All right, who did I say was second? Will. Will, clip two is for you.
I found you in my bed. How'd you wind up there? You are a mystery. Little black curly hair. Little black curly hair.
Okay, don't worry, Tara, you don't have to be mad at me. It is Friends.
That's correct. That is not the filthy one, for the record. Okay, Dave, clip three is for you.
I'm really looking forward to this filthy one.
Who's going to get it?
Don't bury me with a thumping pea or sounding la la la. Let's all go to a taco show and know how such an front blow my nose. You're like written buttons and bows.
Well, shit. I mean, this is a 50-50. Now, we're rewatching Cheers at this house, so I'm tempted to think that maybe she's seen it on Cheers recently, but I don't remember that. But I'm also not paying very close attention to the show as it's on. But also, I feel like Fraser Crane there, who I believe that is, has like a deeper voice. And as he got so long in Fraser, his voice is deeper than it is in Cheers. So I'm going to roll the dice and say that's Fraser.
Ding, 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 ding. That is Fraser. Good job. All right, clip four is for Sarah.
This is sexy getting ready song. This sexy getting ready song. Fluffing and fluffing. bouncing, giggling and laying, sexy gonna ready sound.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Ding, ding, ding.
I'm shocked we never had that before in a Tube Tunes.
Yeah.
Did we really never?
I do keep track. We have not. But we did we did that episode for the canon. So that might be where you remember
it. No. That's why. I knew it.
Oh, no. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is obviously a very deep well for the purposes of Tube Tunes. Clip 5 is for Will.
Rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Vo vo vo-dee-o. Rubber ducky, joy of joys. When I squeeze you, you make noise. Rubber ducky, you're my very best friend, it's true.
Okay, this is between Sesame Street and Oz. Let's go with Sesame Street.
Good guess. All right, clip 6 is for Dave.
They say the world looks down on the bureaucrats. They say we're anal, compulsive, and weird. But when push comes to shove, you gotta do what you love, even if it's not a good idea. Zoidberg!
They said I probably shouldn't be a surgeon.
They poo-pooed my electric frankfurter.
They said I probably shouldn't fly with just one eye.
I am Bender, please, and Sir Carter.
Okay, well, for the record, I knew what that was before the 10,000 character names in the second half of that clip. That is from the bureaucratic planet or organization episode of Futurama.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. One of the few clips of Futurama we ever made my dad, a university registrar, watch. Because relatable. Okay, clip 7 is for Sarah.
Put your doubts to the side, get his ass in the bed. Even if it's whack, you can still get some head. Go for it, go for it, go. Ho for it, ho for it, ho. Do you want that dick or no? You better go for it, ho.
That's not the filthy one either. It's a really filthy game.
Oh boy, I do not know ho, so I'm going to say Orange is the New Black, because why not?
No, that's a good guess. That's not correct. Does anyone know?
I don't know. Pose?
No, that's Insecure.
Okay.
Oh.
She likes to do a mirror rap. Okay, clip 8 is for Will.
I don't like spams! Spam, 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 spam.
Is that Monty Python?
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. It's Monty Python's Flying Circus. But
I can't believe we never had that one either.
Yep.
Like 50 years from now, when everybody who ever watched Monty Python will be dead and media is outlawed or whatever, like their legacy will be spam. Like that's going to be their endure. That's the one thing that's going to last the longest that came from Monty Python, which is sad, but also very apt.
Yes, agree. Okay, clip 9 is for Dave, and then we'll do a score break.
Of these characters, they're all on the side. Jane and Ralph, they're back together. I'm smiling oh so wide. And now for my dance solo.
Dad!
Oh, Rogelio.
It's love, 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 the world is...
All right, so don't watch the show, but that's got to be Jane the Virgin, right?
Ding, 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 correct. You actually watched that one. You were in the room when I was watching it. That was when our cable, when the internet was out that weekend.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's get a score break.
All right, pretty close game so far. I have 2 points, and Will and Dave each has 3 points.
It's on,
very
Will.
Very good. I didn't say at the start, but there's 30 questions, so 20.
21.
Well, 21. Thank you, Dave. Clip 10 is for Sarah.
Before we start, Jake has asked to play another piece on his bassoon.
Oh, Fleabag.
You can get an extra Tara point if you remember what that song is called.
Oh, geez. Mm. Oh, is it called Claire.
Don't say it. It's not for you.
Oh, well, it sounds like something goes over
Dave
to the group.
Dave can have it. I don't know. So go ahead, Dave. Go.
Oh, is it called Claire?
It's called Where's Claire?
Where's Claire? Shit.
Okay. Clip 11 is for Will.
I'm the hated milk machine. Everybody hates me now for doing what I'm told. He was trying to be bold. Why can't people keep their willies out of home?
Oh my god.
Is that the filthy one?
Nope.
I don't know. Oh. I'm sorry.
That's Mr. Dave Show. Knows. Mr. Show.
That is Mr. Show.
I must have forgot that during the airless David Cross interview.
Fair enough. Note about this one, because I had to look it up when I was recapping Better Call Saul last season, and he sang The Winner Takes It All with Michael McKean. And there's also a clip online of Bob Odenkirk singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at a, I forget if it was a White Sox or Cubs game. He has gotten way more tone deaf than he used to be. He could actually follow a tune back in the late 90s, but yeah, no more. That talent has left him.
All that yelling.
The Cubs game circumstances may involve carrying a tune in a bucket of beer, so.
Fair enough. All right, clip 12 is for Dave.
Write me a loan, Bill Clinton, a Whitewater loan.
Wow, I really feel like that one's been in this game before.
Nope.
But I trust your record keeping, but that's just me. News radio.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. Last time it was when Johnny comes, it was the gays in the military.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Clip 13 is for Sarah.
For every lad will wander just to have his last. And when they see a pinto rise, they raise a glass. No! And grow about the wantoning. They dance a reel as the troopers go over the lee. Because there's Canton Keen, and there's Aberdeen. And his name is Muckle as he strapped the bogey bogey. A root, a toot, a really a toot.
I don't know. So... Outlander.
Ding, ding, ding.
Whoops, sorry. I did not mean to press that button. That wasn't me being a jerk.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was Outlander.
Wow.
Yeah, you got it. Nice. I mean, she says Aberdeen. She's singing Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy with special lyrics that she's brought back from the 20th century. Good job. Thanks. Clip 14 is for Will.
I lock. Oh. Solo play BBs, 50% off vibrators at Vibrand. 69 notifications.
Fast!
I tweet.
Oof. Girls, I don't know.
That's a good guess, but not correct. Anyone?
I know it. That's, yes? Oh, wait, I think I know it. Is it Broad City?
Yes, it is Broad City. Mm-hmm. Originally, I shit, but I couldn't find that one. Okay, clip 15 is for Dave.
It's Friday night. I'm gonna get drunk. I'm gonna get laid. I'm gonna be late on Monday.
Ugh. Can I hear that once more, please? Dave?
Yes.
Sure. No problem, Dave.
It's Friday night. I'm gonna get drunk. I'm gonna get laid. I'm gonna be late on Monday.
All right, educated guess. It sounds like Amy Sedaris. I'm gonna say Strangers with Candy.
Oh! It was Amy Sedaris, but that is not correct.
Shit. What is it?
It's from At Home with Amy Sedaris.
Oh, see, oh. I thought the character sounded more like her character from Strangers with Candy, who was a complete mess.
She plays a lot of characters on that show.
Yeah, all right.
This one is named Ronnie Vino. She's a wine wholesaler.
Damn.
Okay, clip 16 is for Sarah.
I think I'm in again. It's like a utopia for black people.
Yeah, but seriously, shut the fuck up.
You won't get followed when you try to shop.
You can't wear your hoodie and not get shot.
No white folks to cross the street in fear.
Don't trigger happy cops or scared cashiers.
That loan application can't get turned down.
You're always approved in Negro Town.
This is amazing.
I know, right?
Key and Peele?
Ding, ding, ding! Another excellent guess. Clip 17.
Spread Eagle.
Is for Will.
I wish I could lay your arms down and let you rest at last. Wish I could slay your demons, but now that time has passed. Wish I could stay. Your Star Wars standing fast, but I'm standing in the way. I'm just standing in the way.
Yeesh. Glee.
R.I.P. your mentions, Will. People are going to be mad at that reaction.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Glee, I don't know.
Anyone else?
Buffy.
That's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Clip 18 is for Dave, and then we'll do another score break.
You just say you'll cut tax maps. Don't be elite, Pete. Kiss your fat baby, Amy. Set yourself free. Don't be European, Ian. Say screw France, Lance. Maybe the Germans, Herman. The Dutch, the Swedes. Subsidize a bus, Gus. Don't be pro-choice, Joyce. Not too much sex, Rex. Take it from me.
Is that Veep?
That is Veep. Ding, ding, ding.
All right,
let's get another score break.
Let's do.
Still quite close, but the lead has shifted somewhat. Will has 3 points, and Dave and I are tied with 5 points.
Mm. Woo! Good job, everybody.
It's on bunting. Outlander!
Let's play clip 19 for Sarah.
If I'm being honest, it was all very harrowing when the invite came for an evening of caroling. I don't like singing, I'm not much for conversation, and the combo of the two gave me such hesitation. I took a little something just to dull all the edges. Either that or I was certain to be jumping off the ledges. I'm really quite sorry, but I'm going to admit it. I'm really so sorry. If I could, I would quit it. But the fact of the matter is I did a little cocaine tonight.
I'm going to be mad because I think I know this, but I can't pull it. So Benson.
It was a lead topic on this podcast.
Oh, so Benson then.
Twas not. Anyone else?
It's familiar, but I can't place it.
That is from the co-op episode of Documentary.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, everyone.
I debated between this one and the brown and the beige, but I thought this one was more memorable, and I was wrong. Clip 20 is for Will.
I've been slumping all season, but now I found a reason. I struck on a love that is true. I used to play the field. I used to be a roamer, but the season's turning around for me now. I finally bagged me a homer. That's right.
Lorraine, we're going to have to cut you off. We're getting some kind of grinding noise on the track.
Again, either The Simpsons or Oz. I'm going to go with The Simpsons.
That is correct.
It was Oz. Is that the one? That's the only one that Matt Groening wrote? Is that that one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Clip 21 is for you, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Shots fired. Portia Scott Griffith declares squad feud with MMN boardroom bitch.
Now. You know you better watch this, bitch. I've had enough of your ish, bitch. I'm a famous and rich, bitch. So you better watch this, bitch. You know you better wash this fish.
You know you better wash this fish. I've had enough of your ish fish. I'm a famous and a rich fish. You better wash this.
Okay, so that's from Great News.
Ding, ding, ding.
And that is like the most cringeworthy part of that show. I thought I hated that episode. And it does not work at all. It's really bad.
It's not great. Yeah. But you got it. And yeah, that's what counts.
That's the important part.
All right. Clip 22 is for Sarah D. Bundy.
You like what I got, but baby, don't test me. Don't test Put a me. Towel down, cause the swag is messy. Messy. Now I'ma tell you what I'm about to do. I'm skeet, skeet, skeet all over all you. Over then I'ma sit back, watch you rub it in. Real Cosmo, girl, it's good for your skin. Hey. My next move, baby, beyond belief. Put it on a toothbrush, girl, brush them teeth. Brush them hey. Teeth. All that G,
hey, all that G.
Tell you how it is.
Tell you how it is.
When you want it on your belly.
When you
Also not the dirty one.
The one. Well, that's definitely not the dirty one. I don't, I feel like I actually know this, but
you do.
You do.
Yeah.
Do I?
You 100% do. Yes.
Do I?
Yes.
Atlanta?
No, that's a good guess.
That's,
what is it, Dave?
Frisky Dingo.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Tequil.
Of course.
All right, clip 23 is for Will.
Across the void we come a-warping. Across the fields of stars we soar. We pledge to land and sun. Spaceship and when at last.
So there's some context clues there.
I kept listening for like Robin Williams' voice, as I didn't hear it, but I'll go ahead and say Mork and Mindy anyway.
No, it's not.
My educated guess because of the lyrics was Third Rock from the Sun.
That's correct. Oh, it is Third Rock from the Sun.
I forgot that show existed.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
All right, clip 24 is for Dave.
Bad girls don't like to go to dog prom.
Don't know. I think I heard the word prom and sad, so I'll say Daria.
No, that's a good guess, though. That's Bob's Burgers.
Oh, really?
It's about Tina when she makes friends with Tammy.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay, clip 25 is for Sarah.
When the ovum first descends, just expel, and it's expelled with the uterine lining. And the flow, and the menstrual flow begins. Out the vagina, it all comes sliding. Now, now you're not alone, 'cause everybody bleeds from time to time.
I really don't know, so I'm gonna guess Big Mouth.
Big Mouth is an excellent guess, and it is correct.
Good job.
Man, nice. Guessing. It's what's for clip, dinner.
Clip 26 is for Will.
Hey, shake a leg.
Hey, shake a leg.
It's Mr. Greg.
It's Mr. Greg.
And he's here to spend his dough all over the town.
He's got the bucks.
I've got the bucks.
It's all deluxe.
It's all deluxe. When you're dining out with me, it's the finest steak and brie. And if I break a table, it ain't no blow. Just bill it to my bank.
$100? Gee, thanks.
I do not know.
Sarah or Dave?
That's Steven Universe.
That is Steven Universe.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, clip 27 is for Dave, and then we'll do our last score break before our final question.
Yeah! I'm Bobby B. I'm going country.
I'm Peter P. I wear a hat now.
I drive a truck for girls and bands now.
I have a gun, cool. And I don't wear condoms.
Very cool. It's worth your point, no round and round.
Do-si-do and drop it down.
Right back up and body your bra.
Yeehaw!
We country, y'all.
Rowing country bros, redneck and springtail, the worst of both worlds.
Rowing
country bros, whiskey and vodka, the worst of both worlds.
The worst of both worlds.
The worst of both worlds.
Is this Kroll Show?
It is Kroll Show. All right, last score break before each of you gets your one last question.
All right. Dave is in the lead narrowly with 7. I have 6. Will has 4.
Ooh.
All right.
Exciting.
Not anything could happen, but a couple of things could happen.
All right. Let's go to clip 28 for Sarah.
Hot cars, we'll clean up the town. We'll turn that old brown upside down. Hot cars, we're aiming to please. You know we'll get down on our knees. We're taking on the bad boys with our loaded guns. We'll pump you full of molten lead. Bang, bang, you're dead. Hot cops, just give us a squeeze. Hot cops.
What the fuck?
Hot cops.
I don't know. Yeah. Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
No, good guess. Anyone?
No idea.
Arrested Development.
Oh.
Hot Cops.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. Wow, it's been a long time since I watched Arrested Development. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Clip 29 is for Will, who has not been smiled upon by Picky on this day.
I guess you wrote this for you, huh?
It's an old song.
And it's being sung with feeling. Try not to look too moved, okay?
Okay, this is Oz.
I mean, they should be in prison, but no, it's not. Sarah D. Bunting?
Da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na, 90210.
It is 90210.
All right.
Clip 30 is for Dave.
All right.
Balls, 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 balls.
The song of the summer, guys. It's the 30 Rock.
It is 30 Rock. All right, let's see here those final scores.
Wrapping it up, Will had 4, I had 6, and Dave is our victor with 8.
Woo! Dave!
Great game, Tara.
Dave! There's also a tiebreaker if anyone wants to play it just for funsies.
Yeah.
Wait until the clip is over.
Okay. And then shout it out.
And then shout it out.
What's at stake?
Tara
will do your dishes for a week. Here we go.
And it's raising us higher and higher.
Raisins are from heaven. Now we're raising hell.
Higher and higher.
Build the pickets higher. Don't skimp on that barbed wire.
All right. So, Sarah, you didn't get Frisky Dingo, and this is Frisky Dingo Jason. Do you want to take this one?
Is it the Extacles?
No.
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 It's all Clone High.
It's Clone High.
Clone High. Yeah.
Which episode is that from?
It's the Raisin episode.
From the musical. The musical episode, where they're all smoking raisins.
Oh.
Well, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We gave you our fair and balanced assessment of Showtime's series, The Loudest Voice, before going around the dial with stops at Divorce, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, The Handmaid's Tale, and The Rook. Will couldn't quite convert his OJ Made in America canon pick for the extra point. We crowned winners and losers of the week. By the way, that was, do you like my little sports thing? I looked it up. And Dave was the winner of this week's game time. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Balls.
Sarah D. Bunting.
This whole situation was a very dumb situation.
And Will Leach.
One more time for good time's sake. My God.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
And I can tell you right now, he ain't coming out anytime soon. Okay, we're going to get up. We're going to pull up high. Get out of all this bullshit.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.